These are the droids you're looking for.
Over here!
Death Star alert.
You're looking for.
This is madness.
It blew my mind when I read about it.
No, it's 100% going to be the best film in the franchise.
This is madness.
Star Wars is only now starting.
Did you hear that? Did you hear that?
These are the droids you're looking for.
Did you hear that? Did you hear that? What are you talking about?
I felt nauseous with just pure excitement.
These are the droids you're looking for.
Why isn't it December 15th already?
And then I saw the Porg for the first time speaking. And I'll tell you what, it really whets the appetite.
Welcome back to the Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. Alongside Chris and Sam, I am Ryan, filling in for Mike this week, who's out for very exciting news that I will let him share when he is back. While we're here, Chris, we have a very exciting guest with us today. Would you like to introduce our very exciting guest?
Of course. You might be able to hear his work on the NPR quiz show, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. And he's currently a producer on season one of Wyatt Cenac's Problem Areas, which is now available to stream on HBO. Please welcome comedian Tim Barnes. Hey, Tim.
Hello.
Welcome, Tim.
Here. Yeah.
Welcome to the droids.
I was trying to think of, like, is there, like, a proper hello in the Star Wars universe? And
yeah.
Nothing mind. Yeah.
No,
I need to say, before we started recording, Tim did a perfect word-for-word reading of the opening of The Lord of the Rings. You could do that if you'd like as a salutation, but right. I'm not sure.
Right. Yeah, it was pretty breathtaking.
We might have to start our own podcast for that.
I hit record. I'm going to set it to music, and I'll send it back to you.
Yeah. Howard Shore is currently working on the score for it. So, Tim, since we have you here, we're so excited to have you. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your history with Star Wars, how you got into it, what it means to you? Anything you like.
Yeah, I mean, my history of Star Wars really is completely tied, as much as I don't want this to be the case, to that revamp of interest that came out when the prequels were just in the zeitgeist. So I remember seeing, before that, I went to the movies with my dad to see the special editions of the Star Wars original trilogy, I believe. I think that's what it was called, and that was really exciting. But then the hype of The Phantom Menace, like, really caught me. I was in, I think, third or fourth grade. I was getting all of those cups from Pizza Hut and Taco Bell. And I think at my house where my parents are in California, there's a Mace Windu cup there somewhere.
Nice.
And a Jar Jar. And it really took me a while to realize, I think it was only in high school that I realized maybe the prequels don't hold up so much, but that...
I challenge you to rethink that.
Whoa.
I see we have a prequelist amongst us.
Oh, we sure do.
Oh, do we ever, yes.
Have you heard the story of Darth Plagueis?
Oh, my God. Yeah. That's the birth of it, and it was so intense that I would read all of the expanded universe books. I remember in middle school when there were homework assignments about it was like you had to use a new word, define it, and then use it in a sentence. All of my sentences on my homework were Star Wars related.
It's all midichlorians.
Yeah. It was it had the encyclopedia, and it was a time where, like. And I don't know I know those are all legends now, but if that expanded world of Star Wars literature really has that same magic, I just don't know because I'm not a kid, you know, reading these books again.
Right.
But I read, like, Darth Maul's journal. I read Padme's journal. I read Anakin's journal. Like, all these, like, weird scholastic books.
Sure.
Yeah.
So you're like a journal guy.
Big on the Star Wars journals.
Of the Star Wars voyeur.
Do you find yourself when you're like watching some of the newer movies, like this new wave, do you see them borrow from that kind of source material?
Yeah, and I think that's great. I think every time they do that, that is like, that makes it feel more like what they're saying legends are. They're saying that the legends are sort of this hearsay, this history that hasn't really been confirmed about the Star Wars universe. And so I think every time that they kind of I know they brought Grand Admiral Thrawn mm-hmm. into one of the animated shows. I think mm-hmm. that gives more value to it. But at the same time, I think there are certain... I mean, certain elements they just couldn't do because the actors kind of aged rapidly
right.
before they could they could make everything yeah. fit.
Right.
So,
until we yeah. have the CG technology. That's a
follow-up question. When you see, like, a peripheral character like an Unkar Plutt in The Force Awakens, do you find yourself wondering what's in his journal?
You know what, I do. I think one thing they've mastered in the new movies is making these side characters that you're actually interested in, and that's something that definitely was the case in the original trilogy. The prequels, I never wanted to know more about Dexter Jester. I never wanted to know more.
I got to step
See,
in.
See, this is
say,
where we split, Tim.
I'm so sorry. You've been great. Thank you so much. I mean, how does he own that diner? How did he get there?
What nostalgia is he referencing?
I don't know why. Yeah, I don't know why the Empire got rid of the Airstream.
Yeah. It's so weird. So weird.
Yeah.
I find it interesting that you talk about the glasses, like the collectible glasses, because I remember very specifically when Phantom Menace came out, they had those the character Pepsi cans. Do you guys remember this?
Oh yeah. Yes.
Yep.
And yeah. I feel like Tim bring this up, and we've spoken about our history of Star Wars in the past. We all have there's like a tactility.
Yeah.
To things that we remember, you know, yeah. like the glasses or the toys or beyond just the movies, which I think is really interesting in this kind of universal. If I may, kind of theme with these things.
Yeah, I feel like they marketers are very good at tapping into that.
Yeah, I'm saying it like this is this magic, like divine thing.
Sorry,
it's like someone at Fox at the time was like, you know what'll really get them? 24 character cans that are really hard to find, all of them.
Sorry to deflate the magic there, Ryan. That's usually not my yeah. my role.
Jeez.
I agree. Sam, for my birthday, bought me the Ample Hills, like the ice cream pints that had like Star Wars drawings on them. I still have them.
Yeah, the disposable. You're referring to the disposable cardboard containers,
yeah,
right? The ones that you eat the ice cream and then you throw them out, right?
Yeah, exactly.
That's what everybody
does.
Did
you eat the ice cream? Because you weren't supposed to drink the Pepsi.
Oh no.
It lost its value.
This is terrible. Tim,
if you drank the Pepsi, yeah.
Aside from glasses, do you have any favorite Star Wars memorabilia, merch, anything special that comes to mind?
I have treasure chest full of the Phantom Menace toys because I was so into it that my parents told my entire family for like my birthday or Christmas, mm-hmm. Tim just likes Star Wars. And I just found out recently there was just a surplus of cheap Phantom Menace toys. and so I have so many of them. I'm trying to think.
You mean like the 5-inch Kenner action figures, like those guys?
Yeah, sort of like that. But I don't think Kenner was making the Phantom Menace ones. But yeah, it's like that. A lot of useless stuff that I can't sell at all.
Right. But
there were some original trilogy toys that were coming out at that time, mm-hmm. and I think my favorite was this. This action figure of C-3PO that you could kind of take apart and put back together. Sure. And it was with one of the silver kneecaps.
Ooh.
And that was definitely one of my favorites for sure.
Right.
I'm trying to think of anything crazy. I'm gonna have to come back to you on that.
Like once you get like marked as a Star Wars person, especially when you growing up, becoming an adult, it's like it becomes so easy for your family. They're just like, I'll just get them something with Star Wars on it. Like, like I've gotten like a box of Cheez-Its that just have Star Wars on it. I'm like, hey, this is great.
I remember so specifically, it was Attack of the Clones cereal that I think they're variations. It either had Obi-Wan or Jango Fett on it. And it was like marshmallows, basically, but they were all like Attack of the Clones
right.
marshmallow cereal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Turns out that for Chris's birthday, I could just get him any snack and write Star Wars on it. These are Star Wars Cheez-Its.
100% true. I'd eat it. Even if you just gave them to me like a plastic bag and just said they came from that box, I'd be content.
So, Tim, since we know that you love Star Wars glasses and that you're possibly misguided on the prequels, what are your thoughts on Solo, the most recent foray into the universe that we love so much?
My official thought is that I need to see it again because I do
diplomatic
think that yeah, very Barack Obama. I do admit that, you know, half of my experience of watching the movie is trying to get used to these characters play the part. Mm-hmm. But outside of that, I don't think it was constructed in the best way. So I kind of, my initial thought right after walking out of the theater was a C.
Oh.
So I'm hoping in my second viewing to give it a B.
Right.
But I think my main points about it are, I guess, kind of playing devil's advocate, I do think my opinion of it could evolve over time depending on what other TV shows and movies they make that kind of add more depth to some of the characters that kind of appeared and then died all of a sudden before you cared about them. And then in terms of some of the writing things I didn't like, I felt like for a character like Lando, who I love, I love that new series of comics that they made a couple years ago, the Lando comics. And I think there's like an element of mystery to him that's so ripe for like good storytelling, and they just kind of have been avoiding that. And I hated that the introduction to that character was literally a character describing him to Han Solo instead of just meeting him.
Right.
You know, that,
that's very, very true. It's like we can see him.
Like, let's get to figure that out. You know,
he's available to us.
The movie's right there.
Yeah, like when you point something like that out, or like among like our, you know, our crew, I think, you know, Ryan, you've had sort of like the harshest read on it. It's funny. I guess what I find with Solo, and I've only seen it the once, so I also probably could be due for a rewatch. You know, I'll be excited to see it again. I realize that all these flaws or all these things that, you know, everyone points out as like maybe not structurally sound in the movie, I was really taken by the ride of it all. Like, I didn't notice. Like, when you say that, I'm like, oh my gosh, yeah, that was totally an example of telling, not showing. And you've got this amazingly charismatic performer, you know, give him an action beat to open on, give him something to do that we can see and know his character rather than have him told to us. But I didn't even notice. I don't know.
Also, his introduction necessitated us knowing the background of Lando, like that we're bringing from the outside world.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, like, well, they reveal him and we're like, it's Lando, but the movie doesn't treat him like that.
Uh-huh. Well,
you know, it doesn't give him an intro like worthy of anything other than like the preconceived notions we have of him.
Yeah.
Which is a strange thing. Because you have to kind of like ride that line. You have to like give the audience like, oh, like, you know, when Carrie Fisher shows up in The Last Jedi, like an applause break of sorts.
Right.
But it's also like, that's not the first time that like the universe is meeting that character. It's like a strangely handled. And Tim, I just want to say, as a prequel apologist, if you want that movie to be a B, you walk in and you will it into being a B. It'll work, I promise.
I really want to hear so much about how you managed to watch the prequels, I guess.
We're all gonna watch these movies so many times that they're all just gonna average out to a B anyway. You know, it's like the good ones are a B because like I get bored because I've seen them so many times, and the bad ones are a B because, you know, they're not as bad as I remembered, and you know, just it all averages out.
Yeah,
you watch Attack of the Clones. I don't remember this scene. How rarely I get a new scene in a Star Wars movie I've seen before. Yay! Yeah.
I will.
Tim,
say,
do you have? Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Chris.
Oh, I loved the opening scene of Solo. I thought I know a lot of people said that they didn't like it. I love that weird water gangster that was controlling the underworld of the planet. But what
Lady Proxima, I believe.
Yeah. I thought the way they opened it with the multiple title cards was interesting. It felt sort of like Blade Runner in a way with the color palette and how it was going. Mm-hmm. But what I didn't like was, I know that people hate that this guy, this general or whatever for the Empire, gave him the last name Solo. Mm-hmm. I don't really mind that moment, but what I hate is the shot of Han Solo afterwards where he just does sort of a smirk. It's things like that that bother me about this movie. Like, it's one thing to let that happen, mm-hmm. but then to sort of linger on it where you're expecting some sort of like applause or something.
It's as if he has seen the movies as well.
Right. He's like, you're going to love this. He said that right before
because
the scene.
If the guy just says Solo and you move along, it doesn't feel like he's actually been stamped with that last name. It could feel like, oh, he just kind of said that to himself while he was typing it. You're like more open to interpretation with it, but then to give it that sort of glorious moment.
Yeah.
And one other thing that kind of started to bother me the more I thought about it is Han Solo, in that moment where he's explaining how he has no people and all this stuff, mm-hmm. you're assuming he's some sort of orphan, or you're assuming something happened. And then at some point, he's in the Millennium Falcon with Lando, and he starts talking about how his dad used to build parts for ships. And his dad, to me, sounds like a pretty swell guy. It doesn't seem like there's any drama there.
Right.
Seems like he's a hardworking, blue-collar guy on Corellia.
Yeah.
And so then it's just like, why are you claiming that you have no people? You clearly knew your father. You haven't said anything negative about him.
Right.
Well, they whenever
love him.
Ron Howard came in, and it was really unfortunate. He had to cut the scene where it goes on, and Han says, but then one day he went out and to go around the corner for death sticks and never came back.
Something like that.
Just a little voiceover like Ron Howard saying that.
Yeah. And it was Arrested Star Wars.
Ron Howard thinks that if a character doesn't say something, then we'll never, ever know it.
Yeah.
Now,
that's
just
his classic.
It was just a weird thing. And then Lando talks about how much he loves his mom. And I guess I wanted from this to do two things, which is just make a interesting origin story that is just fun. But then I was also hoping it would give some subtle insight into the character of Kylo Ren. Mm-hmm. Because if you think about it in that way, you know, the Solo film is your ability to do what the prequels did for Anakin, but doing that for the father of Kylo Ren, you know, something like that is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah,
but I got no insight into, you know, maybe what makes him Kylo Ren tick based off of like these struggles that Han Solo was dealing with.
Well, that's a great point. Yeah, it's kind of like we could see a lineage here. There's an opportunity for
like
it.
A like, sins of the father kind
right,
of thing.
Right. Yeah, and we just
They should have had Alden with a line like. He means nothing to me.
Or him just go, you need a teacher.
To Chewbacca.
To Chewbacca, yeah, to Chewbacca. I'm sure you follow the news. You know it goes through many directors. Are you a fan of Ron Howard or a fan of Lord and Miller? Or we talked about it on the pod a little bit. Could you tell kind of the differences in scenes or anything like that? Or did it not really distract you?
I don't know if I could tell the differences. My gut is telling me that some of those cheesier moments are Ron Howard, those moments where it kind of just like, even the moment where Chewbacca first sits in the cockpit with Han, it was just like a little too on the nose for me.
Sure.
They really lampshaded a lot. You know,
I mean, that's Ron Howard's MO. Right. Non-distinct and on the nose.
Yeah.
You could hardly tell anyone made it.
Right.
Yeah. And part of me wonders, like, if the reason the cinematography is so dark is just because they had to match, you know, in post or something.
Right.
It's like shooting Godzilla in the rain.
It's like covering up stuff. You could literally see Lord and Miller in the shots. Like, oh, this is not good. This is not good at all.
Yeah.
Well, that was part of the problem. They had to let him go because all the sets were mirrors, and they were like, guys, that's not how you make a movie.
Please don't do this. Yeah. And as a comedian, could you see some of the kind of the Lord and Miller, like the improv-y? I noticed a few of those where it's like they might have let a scene hang on for 5 to 10 extra seconds and let them riff a little.
See that. I think the scene that worked the best and was like genuinely surprising to me for some reason was just the meeting with Chewbacca.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was so spot on and so fun and so funny. And I feel like there had to have been an element of improv with that,
right.
That moment. I guess, you know, when I'm kind of going beyond your question. I just sort of retroactively trying to edit this movie. But like, another thing that kind of threw me off, but also could change depending on if they make a TV series or another movie,
mm-hmm.
is I loved, what's the name of the robot? L37?
I think it's L3, right?
L3?
Yeah.
I love that robot. I think she's great. I love Lando's interaction with her. But when she dies, Lando's reaction feels so suddenly intense to me,
mm-hmm.
in a way that I feel like I'm either required to read a book about them or see something about them to make me understand
right.
How intense that moment
right.
is.
You kind of
It's a strange moment because tonally it's odd because he goes out to save her and it's kind of slapsticky for a second.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. I remember our audience laughed and then it just shifts so quickly to like her falling apart in his arms.
Right. You kind of look around the theater. Like,
after he just had this very like almost comical, like, I'll go get her. And he's like being heroic, but it's like a little, like, it's just like a little slapstick.
It's
a strange moment.
Yeah.
Let me ask you guys.
It's jarring because you think at first it's camp, mm-hmm. but then you realize like it's perhaps overly sincere, and then you're like, I was laughing at someone's pain.
Just like a mean film trick they pulled off.
A mean film trick where they switch directors in the middle of the sequence. Let me ask you guys, if we could go back in time, would you have preferred to have seen Lord and Miller's full version of the movie or the movie if Ron Howard had had it from the beginning?
I think definitely Lord and Miller's. I think having seen this final product, that at least seems like it would be taking a lot more risks in a lot of ways. Who knows, like, the actual nature of the drama? Part of me wonders if... I don't know how hands-on Lawrence Kasdan was on the set, but my imagination is the fact that Lawrence Kasdan is a very skilled director, and so maybe there was just some natural tension with him watching these two guys kind of improv his script on top of the fact that he's Kasdan is a well-respected director in his own right.
He's standing there just being like, I wrote The Big Chill.
Yeah. That's pretty great. Wow.
I feel like I have my response, Ryan, because I think that's actually a really good question. Well, you always ask such stupid things. that was really condescending, actually. Sorry. I gotta cut that from my vocab. We got some sensitive folk on the pod.
That's your apology.
Except
I couldn't get all the way through it.
Nope.
Look, no, what I think is interesting is, like, I actually think between those two options, I think I would be like, I'll take the movie we got, which is crazy because it feels like such
another director.
It feels like such a compromise, but I'm like, I think if Ron Howard had it from the beginning, it would have been like smoother production,
mm-hmm.
but like flatter
right.
movie.
It would have been all yellow tinted.
I do have, so I'm someone who has really loved, I think we all have maybe like loved the Disney era of Star Wars. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of trust if Kathleen Kennedy and everybody at Lucasfilm and Disney mm-hmm. were like, this isn't working. This isn't the movie. We got to replace these guys. Then I'm like, I don't want that movie probably.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Perhaps. Or it could have
I would have liked to see the one where they fired Ron Howard, brought in another person, fired them, brought in another person.
It's just like, this movie had 13 directors.
They turn it into like the New York I Love You of Star Wars movies.
Just a bunch of vignettes.
But at the end of the day, it is the most expensive Star Wars movie ever made because of the reshoots. So that is like a very major decision. Yeah.
It seems like a waste, though, doesn't it? Like, I'd rather, like, take that...
If they were going to throw $300 million at a movie, like, for real, I agree.
Yeah, like, put that in episode 9. I want to see the craziest thing I've ever seen before. Throw Superman in that movie. I don't care. Yeah. Put them all in. You could pay for it.
I think they should have done that. I think they should have taken the $300 million that they spent on this, not made this movie, and then made... Episode 9 cost $550 million.
Exactly. Just like go insane. Just special effects.
When you get that high, though, in budgets, does it make a difference anymore?
I think the lunches on sets just get better.
Well, one of my main thoughts after watching it was my C grade for this would definitely be closer to an A if this was just released on Netflix.
Oh, yeah. Like the Cloverfield Paradox. If I paid to see that movie, I'd be furious.
Yeah.
Because I watched it on Netflix, I was like, this is rad.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
That's
great. They should really think about that for when they have Disney VOD.
Yeah.
If it's not going well, they say, oh, this is our flagship feature film debut on Disney VOD.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. I would have been like, this thing's amazing, the Solo Paradox.
Yeah, I can't believe they didn't put this in theaters.
And if they did the thing that you used to do with VHS, you know, in the early days of VHS, and basically said, this movie isn't going to be available to purchase and own for a year or 2 years or something, and actually made it like the only way to see it is at the venue, and in that case the venue is, you know, streaming through the app on your TV or whatever, that, you know, that's subscriptions, that's monthly income, you know?
Everyone would have been like, it's pretty good for streaming.
Kathy, hire us Kathy.
I love what Kathleen Kennedy has done, and I know that she's made a lot of tough decisions, but part of the Lord and Miller thing, I feel like there's some parallels there to, like, the struggles George Lucas had making A New Hope as a sort of, you know, this is first time making a movie like that.
Right.
That's what they keep saying about Lord and Miller. And just, I can't imagine the level of things they had to deal with like, the lack of confidence in them.
Sure.
Which I think is also, like, a major parallel with George Lucas. And you watch those documentaries and, like, the crew is basically making fun of him.
Right. Yeah. They're just like, what is this?
Yeah. So it definitely has to not be a good feeling when the studio heads make a choice like that and make that clear to you.
Right.
Yeah. And in that comparison, at least, you know, this was George's idea. This was his passion, so, you know, he's gonna have more of a confidence in seeing it through, that he got it this far and he wants to carry it across the finish line. Whereas it can sap your confidence so fast if people are questioning you or kind of, you know, giving you side eye or you know, outright saying what you're doing isn't working. You know, how do you keep going on day after day?
George Lucas had the benefit of having that, like, 70s confidence, you know, where he was, like, making the movie and it wasn't going well, but Brian De Palma was like, hey, man, screw him. You know? Like they at least had that, where they were like, who cares if the movie sucks, man? Yeah. We're just making movies.
Yeah, like, when you read about those guys, it was just like, he's like, yeah, so we just got, like, $2 million and made a movie for nothing.
Yeah. Yeah, because didn't THX kind of tank American Zoetrope or whatever?
Francis Ford Coppola has gone bankrupt, I think, 12 times.
Coppola just took a bite of his pepperoni sandwich and said, oh, well.
They were just like, listen, guys, we're going to get $500,000 and a truckload of cocaine, and we're going to make a movie. It'll be fine, I think.
It'll be fine, I think.
Lord Miller couldn't do that.
That is true, yeah.
Lord Miller had to answer phone calls and actually get things on film.
That's it's definitely, I mean, there's, with the Disney purchase, there's definitely, like, new people that they have to, like, be accountable for, that, like, a board and kind of a corporate structure too, so I'm sure that whole thing has to play into it more than we're seeing.
Well, it's so funny because, I mean, this speaks to things we've spoken about, but you know, people who ended up Star Wars fans who ended up getting sour on George Lucas at the end with the prequels, especially, they kept saying, like, there's no one to say no to George. You know, like, they always complain about right. that. And right. now there's, like, so many people to say no to the filmmakers, yeah. and everybody's still mad.
Well, yeah. Tim, I want to add, this is kind of, this is jumping off, going backwards a little bit, but in terms of, I'm thinking about what you liked or didn't in Solo. You weren't crazy about how they, you know, introduced or maybe handled Lando. What did you think of, I mean, there's a lot of talk of, you know, how Donald Glover kind of is the breakout of the movie, and, you know, the one piece that everybody seems to agree they want or met, you know, want to see more of, or you know, there's talk of a Solo movie for Lando, a Lando Solo movie.
Solo, or, Lando, a Star Wars Lando.
Lando, a Star Wars Solo flick. But, you know, what were your takes on, what was your take on his performance, his take on the role?
As someone who has always dreamt of someday playing young Lando, I don't think a lot of my opinion came out of jealousy, but I think he did, a good job. But sometimes it leaned a little too far into an impression, and I don't know if some of that really is just like the writing of the character, because they really are just kind of shoving the concept of Lando down your throat instead right. of you sort of right. getting, like, there's no real journey for that character at all.
He's just all taglines.
Yeah. I gotta tell you, my least favorite scene is Kira in his cape room trying on his capes. Mm-hmm. That, to me, was maybe one of the worst scenes I've ever seen in a movie. Just a moment where Han Solo walks in on her trying his capes. Now, I have a
there's
friend.
All this talk about how George Lucas was on set for that scene and how he, like, acted it out.
So
and,
funny.
Like, God, would I pay to see that footage?
Wow.
Yeah.
Where they're like, he became Han Solo for a second, and I'm like, did he?
I mean, the character of Han Solo is loosely based on George Lucas.
Yeah.
He's the George Costanza.
Yeah.
Someone suggested to me that scene would be better if Han was trying on Lando's capes.
That'd be amazing.
That was
really
amazing.
Would
and then
be amazing.
Kira walks in. Yeah, that'd be amazing.
Yeah, if she walked in on him and called him out, like, who are you trying to be? Yeah. That actually would yeah. be very oh funny, because if there's one thing that would set Han Solo off, it would be, like, humiliation.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my God.
At the hand of a woman.
So much, that's so much better than what they did.
We need to have a side podcast just called Rewriting Solo, where we just go through scene by scene, we change what we did.
I'm going to start a podcast called Dear Ron, where I go through all of his filmography and backseat drive it.
I have a rewrite of the... I haven't actually written it, but I have a rewrite.
Okay, well, that's not a rewrite then.
I have the best version of The Last Jedi in
Ooh,
my head.
What?
If we have time.
You transcribed The Last Jedi?
In my head.
Well, this makes yeah. me curious. What's your hot cold on The Last Jedi? Are you mixed on it?
I've never been more confused walking out of a movie as I was walking out of that one, because I was feeling a lot of things, but I also wasn't feeling a lot of things. But now I think I give it a B.
Okay.
You know?
You've watched it a lot. I see.
There are still just, like, little things that bug me, but overall, mm-hmm. I mean, first of all, Maz Kanata shouldn't have been in it the way that she was.
I will agree with that.
Obviously should have been Lando that they called in the hologram.
Ooh.
That's such an obvious choice to me.
Wow.
And I don't know why.
That's a missed opportunity. I've never thought of that. I, like, forget about Lando, the new one.
Yeah.
Like,
well, Billy D. Williams showed up in Two-Face makeup, and they were like, no. Not that character. Yeah. We're bringing back another one.
Yeah.
I heard a rumor that he's going to be in the third one, but it begs the question,
yeah.
where was Lando when they made that distress call at the end of the
There is, right? See, there is this issue that arises. It's the same thing with Luke in The Last Jedi that where, like, in terms of, like, he was missing, people were dissatisfied with the answer of where he was. Some people, not me. I love that. It's an A-plus for me. But at this point, people who are only getting involved now can only be seen as irresponsible.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't know the reception on that planet. Who knows what that computer's old? You don't know what's going on there.
Yeah.
Do you think he'll just, like, make a joke where he's like, my head was in the clouds? I'm like, that'll be all this forgiven.
He's hanging out with
I like Maz Kanata being in The Last Jedi because we had something in common where we're both very attracted to Justin Theroux.
It is just, it was, like, definitely pandering to kids or something. It was so weird. She has a camera following her while she's jumping around shooting people.
That to me was the confusing part. Was that really? Just the camera? Then, the camera angle.
Really?
But was the most confusing part is she mentions the red pendant, and then an image of the red pendant appears in the hologram.
Yeah, she has a supercomputer, and she knew she was gonna say that ahead of time. She's like, "Oh, I'll say this." She's actually positioning the camera like along a track. She's like, I'll run over here if we have a few seconds of fire.
Welcome to Splitting Hairs, a Star Wars podcast.
Wow. I'm with you, Tim.
Well,
I agree
Tim, it's funny. It's a running, I was going to say joke. It's not a joke. And in fact, my co-hosts here take it very seriously. I have still only seen The Last Jedi one time.
Yeah.
And until you just brought it up, I forgot that Maz Kanata does in fact make an appearance.
Wow.
Well, you say that, Sam, like it's a flaw of the movie. It's been 8 months.
No. I know the flaw lies in me. I understand.
Tim, how many times have you seen Solo and how many times have you seen Last Jedi? What are some of your counts here?
I only saw Solo once.
Okay.
So I want to find some time to see it again.
Sure.
The Last Jedi, I saw, I think, 3 or 4 times in theaters.
Sure.
And I got the digital copy, and I watched that maybe 4 times. And I really love the documentary on that.
Man. Yeah.
It's phenomenal.
Really, really good.
Yeah.
Man, I don't want to turn this into a Last Jedi episode, but I have so many thoughts about
it. Oh, please. Go on.
I think I'm chomping at the bit to just turn it into that. I want to hear your rewrite,
too. It's a slow news week. Say whatever you want, man.
All right.
Yeah, I'm interested in the rewrite.
My rewrite. Okay, because The Last Jedi is the first Star Wars movie to take place essentially right after the movie that came out before it. There is no grace period between The Force Awakens and The Last Jedi. I would have, and I expected this movie to do this, I would have done something unique with the opening crawl by giving the audience information about the last movie, but from an alternate perspective.
Ooh.
So I would have recapped The Force Awakens from the perspective of the First Order. And I would have given some sort of hint or just some sort of, because like my biggest complaint about it is that you learn absolutely nothing about Snoke. Mm-hmm. And if you're not going to explain that, at least just like put a little nugget in the opening call.
Give us something.
That says this guy is from the Outer Territories or whatever, the Outer Rim.
Right. Just something.
So,
Where does he hail from? Yeah.
And the unknown regions.
Yeah.
And so my version of The Last Jedi really is about the mystery of the unknown regions. Mm. Okay.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you. I hear Ryan so grating his teeth.
You already know that Maz should have been replaced with Lando.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing I would have done was I would have kept. What's Laura Dern's character's name in that?
Captain Holdo.
Admiral Holdo.
Admiral.
Yes.
Oh, Admiral.
Sorry.
Admiral Holdo, because she is very interesting, and she's one of the few characters in that movie that are introduced, and that like I really want to know so much more about.
Mm-hmm.
And then she just kind of goes away.
Yeah. Literally.
Instead
goes away.
Of that,
they send her out in hyperspace.
And then also because like you were losing Leia, and I know they didn't know this in the shooting, but. she, in some ways, to me, represents, like, more than Poe, the carrying on of that torch. Mm-hmm. Speaking of Poe, I would have focused so much less on Poe in that movie because every time I rewatch it, I realize I really could care less about his journey.
Right.
I really do just want to see him blow things up. I don't.
Right. So right. Watch him. Just get in the ship.
Yeah. And Finn is such an interesting character and such a missed opportunity to maybe like explain some missing pieces between the original trilogy and the new trilogy because of how he was forced into the First Order. That could be used to explain what the First Order is, because another thing that confuses me is I have no idea of what the motives of the First Order is, why they want to take over the world, the galaxy. Yep. I have no ability to understand that. And I think fundamentally that's one of the biggest flaws of the new trilogy, is because in the original trilogy, you had these rebels fighting against the status quo. Whereas in this one, it seems like at least in The Force Awakens, that the new Republic is the status quo, and you have this First Order trying to take over.
Right. Yeah. They're a little confusing there. Like, they don't quite explain what the stakes are, and I think it's like they're assuming we're going to take some of this for granted. You just assume that's like, oh, it's another empire, so that information's like built in. But it would be nice to have like something.
Well, it's just weird that the new Republic named their standing army the Resistance.
Yeah,
it just doesn't. It's poor branding. You know, really.
Yeah.
Sam, you've only seen the movie once.
Oh wow.
Another thing that I kind of find confusing is that no one seems to know or at least acknowledge in the movies that Kylo Ren is Princess Leia's son. Mm. Like, no one in the Resistance seems to be aware of that.
Oh, interesting.
And that's a little confusing, especially like when Kylo walks down the ship to fight Luke at the end, and I think Poe sees him in his binoculars and says, "That's Kylo Ren," and Kylo isn't wearing a mask. So I don't know at what point, like, everyone must know what Ben Solo looks like.
Right.
I would guess.
Is he kind of like, isn't that your son? Hey, Leia, that's your son. Hey, Leia, your son's out there. Hey.
He's literally the royal baby. Yeah. Like, this would have been televised all across the galaxy.
Hey, your son is out there. Do you see? Where'd you go? Where are you?
So I might be missing it. I got to write my ideas down. Yeah. But another big change before I get to the biggest one of how in the movie is I would have had, instead of Holdo doing that maneuver, I would have had this movie essentially be about the bravery, the first time you're truly seeing bravery come from C-3PO.
Oh.
C-3PO's always been the butt of a lot of jokes.
Wow.
But and I
bold move.
I got goosebumps. I won't lie. I did just get goosebumps when you said that.
And this idea first came to me because, like, in the beginning of the movie, Leia says something like, "Get that expression off your face."
Yeah.
And so I was thinking about how expressionless his face is, but how much you can imply expression.
Yeah.
And so can you imagine if he just, like, bumped into Holdo and Leia and said, "Oh, I have an idea." And then the next thing you know, he's the only person on the ship
that can, like,
and there's just a close-up of C-3PO's face while he does that maneuver. Can you imagine?
It's like one of those old things where they'd shoot, like, they'd like cut from a coffin to a man's face and then, like, take to a man's face and be like, he was sad and hungry.
Yeah.
I love it.
Can you imagine the levels of emotion you would feel? And of course, there's a possibility that his personality, like, could be downloaded
or something, kind of Easter egg at the end where it's like, it's C-3PO, like,
they upload his consciousness into the ship he's on that also explodes.
Well, that would be a good motif. We got him back. Boom. Aww. Oops. Oh well, we didn't like that guy.
It would add a dark turn to that, Tim, if they revealed, like, that his hand was, like, duct taped to the thruster. So they were like, "We have an idea, 3PO."
I really like that, though. It's like there's some kind of, like, logic thing that only he could crack, or like it's he speaks Bocce and the computer speaks Bocce.
Oh yeah,
like a call,
yeah.
A little callback.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like now you're explaining it. I do like the image of that dispassionate mask.
Yeah.
That Anthony Daniels has droned on about in every interview for 45 years. But the idea of like that
mask.
Finally
gave you what you wanted, Tony.
I mean, he wants to be in these forever. That's the last thing he wants. But that idea of like, yeah, you're 100% right. If we saw it for the first time and could look at it with like, we place determination on that face, that would be really.
Yeah.
Like our head trip for fans, I think. That's a cool idea.
He's straight up legitimate tears. Yeah.
So it seems that episode 8A, which is what we'll call it, full of very bold ideas.
Yeah. Well, you said you had one more in store for
there, I thought the C-3PO thing was the thing.
Oh,
okay,
it gets bigger, Ryan.
It gets bigger. Okay. So, I mean, there's a few things, so many things that have changed about Canto Bight, but I'll skip past that. We get to the point in the film where Snoke and Kylo and Rey are in the throne room. I would add a little bit more conversation about the mystery of, or just the fact that Snoke is from the unknown regions, and he represents a larger threat that no one in the galaxy can comprehend, okay? So Kylo kills Snoke. Kylo extends his hand to Rey. Rey takes Kylo's hand, not because she's joining the dark side, but because the enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Ooh.
Then, for the first time ever, we see TIE fighters and X-Wings go in the same direction towards the unknown regions, and there is a battle against these ships that we've never seen before. Snoke's, you know, whatever, there's an army of Snoke people, who knows? And the final battle we see in the movie are X-Wings and TIE fighters fighting together.
I love it. I'm on board. I'm on board.
I definitely think that the X-Wings and TIE fighters fighting together should be a thing that happens in episode 9. That'd be dope.
That would be shocking. Oh,
that's
my gosh.
A great idea. If there,
and then we see some like new, like crazy ships where it's like, what are those?
Yeah. Like that is how you get an ending, and you'll definitely have a sense of victory, but then you'll also be left with like, I have no idea what's in store in the final part of this trilogy.
Oh my God.
That would be a twist. Those giant ships would be a twist on par with the end of the Cloverfield Paradox.
Oh, yeah, right.
Which is, geez, you thought that was bad.
Yeah. Oh, man. But instead,
that would also address, you know, one of the criticisms. You know, I think we on the podcast have talked a lot about how innovative and creative we think Rian Johnson was with The Last Jedi and like admired that, but one of the criticisms leveled against the Disney era of Star Wars is that it's retreading old ground and it's not going far enough into the new. And so what you're suggesting of like inventing something for the Outer Rim or to inventing something that's like new visual territory, new narrative territory, new character territory, that is like an interesting way to address it. And the idea of teaming up, you know, Imperial, or I guess not Imperial, you know, First Order and Resistance fighters together. Yeah. I don't know. They could do that. And then they could have C-3PO suicide run, you know, wrap it up in nine.
I mean,
bring
also,
the tears.
Like, and then going back to Finn too, like he could be the guy that bridges that gap.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I maintain my feelings about The Last Jedi. I adore it. However, Tim, that was very intriguing. There's a lot here that I think is very intriguing. And when you said X-Wings and TIE fighters flying together, I did get chills.
Because I guess like the way The Last Jedi ends, I'm left thinking, okay, Kylo is in charge of the First Order, but what does that mean?
Yeah. Yeah, what does he have?
Yeah, like what is the goal there? And then you're also just still left with these questions of like, what are the Knights of Ren? Mm-hmm. Who is Snoke?
That is true. Like, we don't know Kylo's goal.
Yeah.
Well, I feel he's in charge of the First Order. What does that mean? Like, mm-hmm. that's the propelling force into the next movie me.
Yeah.
Which is like, what does he want to do with all of this?
Yeah.
Now that he has it, which I think was part of the conflict of The Last Jedi, which was he doesn't really know what he wants out of this. He just sees an opportunity and takes it.
Yeah.
And I have a feeling they'll do something similar to Rogue One that kind of answers a bunch of questions about this new trilogy.
Sure.
Something that takes place like right before that.
Right. Yeah, I think so too. It's just like there's so much time to like spend on it. You know?
It's fertile ground, and there's also the big question, which is what is the power balance when we come into The Force Awakens? The last thing we've seen is the rebellion victory, so the presumption would be that they would establish a new and functional democratic fair government, and the next thing we see it appears that maybe they have, but also the First Order is huge and a force to be reckoned with, and in fact kind of takes by the second movie in this trilogy seems to have taken the lead. And so there's definitely, I don't know if we want a politically focused film, because that got George in hot water in 1999, there is something of interest there, like how did we get here?
And talk about a movie that could just use a map. Man.
I think at the end of, I just want to call this now. Episode 9, Kylo Ren will be, very bad the whole time, and then we'll have an Act 3 turn where he makes a conflicted decision and goes toward the light side.
Yeah.
But then at the end, when asked to join the resistance or the rebellion or whatever the light side is doing at that moment, I think he's going to leave the, similar to Frodo getting on the boat at the end of Return of the King, where he's just like, I've seen too much, Sam.
Oh, wow.
I can't live here anymore.
Wow.
And then he'll go off, be a hermit.
Oh, wow.
He'll move to New York, date some people, have some sexual escapades.
Wait a second. Is Girls the sequel to Star Wars? Amazing. Amazing. Well, Tim, while we have you, real quick, I know I had asked you if you don't have it off the top of your head, your order, your ranking of the Star Wars movie, real quick.
Yeah, let's close out with that. That's
all right. First, should I go from least favorite to favorite?
Yeah, let's go from least to top. Yeah.
From least favorite.
Yeah.
Okay. Least favorite is Attack of the Clones, because it is the most convoluted Star Wars movie. Have no idea, like even more convoluted than The Phantom Menace. Have no idea what's going on. And you hear a phrase like the Clone Wars in A New Hope once, and your mind goes all kinds of places.
Yep.
I think the Clone Wars should be the Jedi fighting some clones.
Yeah.
But what George Lucas did, he said the Jedi are fighting with clones who somehow become the stormtroopers. It's so confusing.
Yeah.
And not even that interesting to me.
Yeah.
So it's that almost is why... a one-sided war. I'm realizing this now.
Yep. Yeah.
And I love that movie.
The Jedi were beating the droids alone, as established in Phantom Menace.
Yeah,
and then the sequel
like
establishes they need a bunch of clones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting point.
Thanks, Sifo Diaz.
Then I have Revenge of the Sith.
Okay. Interesting.
I used to like it more, but every time I watch it now, I see so many flaws and I see so many attempts at humor in the opening. And I don't know who General Grievous is. I don't know. There's so many questions that just pop up at the beginning of that. Plus, you see. R2-D2 just spilling oil and these weird things.
Yeah.
So
who knew he had rockets this whole time?
Great sequence.
And next I have The Phantom Menace.
Okay.
Now, what I like about The Phantom Menace is that it is the only prequel that is shot on film.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that there are visually like a lot of interesting things that are done in that movie compared to the next two.
Sure.
And there is, there's some interest, there's some mystery to it, even though we all know who the Phantom Menace is. Darth Maul is super interesting. I love Qui-Gon, so that's why I have that there.
Okay.
Your prequel ranking is exactly right, by the way. You're 100% accurate. 100%. That was correct.
Yeah. I think we Sam and I share the same.
I'm smiling and coping.
Next, I have Solo, just because I need to watch it again.
Sure.
I think that's a good place for it to be.
You put the movie you're undecided on above Revenge of the Sith.
Yes.
Oh my God.
Revenge of the Sith is that bad.
Oh God.
Yeah, there's these little droid mites that are on, that are attacking ships, and I don't know what's
All right.
Then I have
vulture droids. You're talking about the vulture droids.
The vulture droids. I hate that. I hate when they try to make the droids like animals. Just like make them animals then.
Okay. Ryan, we'll give you your own episode later. Okay, just hang in there, bud.
I have Solo. And I do want to partially bring up something that I was hoping to see in Solo, because Solo is technically the only Star Wars movie that takes place, since Disney's taken over, that takes place closest to the original, to the prequels.
Oh, interesting.
Takes place closest to the prequels. So I was hoping to see some, like, funny bridges between those two worlds, like maybe a droidica or, you know,
something.
A boot ship or something. Yeah. I was hoping they would play with that a little bit more just to tie in the universe a little bit, and they didn't do that. I have Solo there because I still need to, maybe it'll go higher in the ranking one day, maybe it won't, but that's where it is.
It'll middle out.
Yeah. Then I have The Last Jedi, which is great.
Yeah.
I love it, but for me, if my problems with it aren't resolved in the next movie, I don't know what I just watched, sort of. I have The Force Awakens. I think it did its job. It did its job well. It proved that you could make new Star Wars movies that fit in the universe that we all know and love. It was really fun. You have Han Solo in there. It really did almost everything right. Mm-hmm. My only problem with that movie is I don't understand how Starkiller Base works. I really have no concept of it.
That is a good point.
To just suck up an entire sun.
Who built
it? And then, what is that?
It sucks up the symbolic light and shoots out the symbolic arc.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just bizarre.
Once the light is gone, all hope is lost.
After that, I have Return of the Jedi. And my problems with Return of the Jedi are I don't like a lot of things that George Lucas did in the special editions with adding the music and...
You don't like that musical number?
I don't like that musical number. But it is, like, overall really fun. I think when I was a kid, I loved this one the most of the original trilogy. I thought the Ewoks were amazing, but every time I watch it now, I feel like I see a few things that are just...
I always feel like also in that movie, Han Solo is just kind of like smirking at the camera and saying one-liners, and I never like got that until recently.
He kind of becomes the idea of Han Solo in that movie.
Yeah, yeah. But the whole heist of trying to get Han Solo back in the beginning works almost perfectly for me, depending on what version you're watching. After that, I have Rogue One. I love Rogue One.
Oh, wow.
I think for a Star Wars movie that doesn't have any Jedi, it really pulled off giving you this feeling of the Force, and it added a few more layers to the universe. I think it solves one of the biggest plot holes in the Star Wars, in all the Star Wars stories about the Death Star. It's a standalone, and I just think it really works, and visually there's a lot of interesting stuff happening there. After that, I have Empire Strikes Back. I think everyone knows why Empire Strikes Back is great, so I won't...
It's the best.
But the number one for me will always be New Hope.
Wow.
A New
Yes!
Wow.
The perfect balance of a Star Wars movie. It doesn't take itself too seriously, but it takes itself seriously enough, like... it has some of the it's campy in some ways, but it's they're almost doing like Three Stooges antics in the Death Star. And it's just this bizarre mix of everything that I think kind of it is the spark that lighted the flame that will ignite the
Hey, it seems like Last Jedi should be higher on your list if you know that. That's great. Wow. Yeah.
But it really is just like so much fun, and it just takes its time, and you watch it. If you watch this trying to erase your context of the other movies, mm-hmm. it starts off with so much mystery right off the bat. You're like, who is this guy that just stormed onto the ship? Oh, now we're following these droids, and they're on this desert planet for a really long time, but every step of the way, it's super interesting. And then, you know, definitely just following the hero's journey in all of the right ways. I love, my favorite scene of any Star Wars movie really is just Grand Moff Tarkin and all those other generals in a conference room with Darth Vader standing behind them. I don't know what the hell they're talking about, but all just like...
it's just funny, as many times as I've seen it, I could not tell you one word they say.
I think the last time I watched it, I finally understood it.
It's when they dissolve the Senate. They're like, that's the start of the real death grip. That drives the whole thing.
Wow.
That's the interesting thing. The last time I watched it, I was like, I'm really going to pay attention to what they're saying. And you're right. Yeah. They're actually talking about the dissolution of the Senate.
Wow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're like, we've finally done it. Like, the Senate is in our pocket. Wow. And you're like, when you watch it in the context of the prequels, you're like, geez Louise, man, they really told us about this early on, didn't they?
It's amazing.
I guess one other thing, the last thing about that kind of, it blows my mind that when you watch Rogue One and the Death Star kind of destroys a city,
mm-hmm.
that everyone is just like shocked by that. Like, they've never seen that before.
Yeah.
And coming from a reality where we have nuclear weapons and stuff like that,
mm-hmm.
it's bizarre to me that, I mean, it definitely sets the stage for how mind blowing the Death Star is in the galaxy.
Right.
But it's so bizarre to me that they, at that point, had no equivalent to a nuclear weapon in the Star Wars universe.
Yeah, it's all, you know.
Well, you have to remember, it was a long time ago.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. That's true. And so, you know what? It almost has some kind of like base hopefulness about the potential future. It's like, we didn't have to build any of this stuff for so long, and then, you know.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I think that ties, I mean, one thing that's kind of lacking in the prequels is like, what is the big threat?
Mm-hmm.
And then the thing that's lacking in the new movies is like,
they
tried, like, how do you top the Death Star? And so they came up with Star Killer Base.
Right.
Then
they literally say, this is how big the Death Star was.
They show the two side by side. Again, with the animations that they can just pull up on a dime on those computers.
Yeah, do they have someone doing that? Like a motion graphics person?
After Effects.
Could I get a Chiron on this guy?
I just say that to say that the classic triumphant Star Wars ending is a giant battleship blowing up.
Mm-hmm.
But if that is the triumphant thing at the end of this next final movie of this trilogy, it just won't work. And so they really need to figure out what a satisfying threat is that can be destroyed that isn't watching a sphere blow up.
Yeah, we might have to watch a Carillion freighter blow up.
Yeah, but it cannot be a bigger Starkiller base or something like that. But what is it that you can do in this last movie that satisfies everyone and makes you feel like...
For me, if I could give a theory, it would be the dissolution of the Force itself. Kind of like a medieval story where like magic goes out of vogue. So if it's like, if the Force itself is at stake, that could be interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
What if it's a big cube?
Yeah, there you go. Or a big cube, also interesting.
Yeah.
Hey, I haven't seen a cube before.
Yeah. I feel like I'm constantly. That's. Yep.
Nice. Wow.
I think that's a good place to end it on the big cube.
On a big
cube. Tim Barnes, we can't thank you enough for joining us. It's been an absolute delight.
It has been. Tim, before we go, do you got anything going on that you want to plug? Twitter, Insta, anything?
Oh, yeah. Twitter. Just follow me at TimBarnes451. It's the temperature at which jokes burn. And you can keep up to date on everything I'm up to at TimBarnes.com. droidheadscomedy.com.
Great. Well, thank you, Tim.
Awesome. And for the droid heads, follow us on Twitter and Instagram, as always, at droidspod. And please, if you enjoy our podcast, rate and review us on iTunes. It really helps us out. Tim, thank you again so much for joining us. It was really, really a joy to have you here. And that'll do it this week for the Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast.
In the land of Mordor, in the fires of Mount Doom, the Dark Lord saw an unfortunate secret.
Is this coming off the top of your head?
This is the top of my head.